Good morning. Today's daf in Baba Basra's Kuf Mem Dalet. We are in Kuf Mem Gimel Midrash. We are starting today at the Mishnah. A person left over sons that are older and sons that are younger. And so now we are going to be in a state where the property has not been divided, the estate has not been divided. And what we are going to be discussing in the course of this Mishnah and the Gemara is who is basically, we're looking at a corporate entity. Meaning the estate right now has a number of owners, a number of shareholders, if you will. But basically, it's the estate. In other words, and the estate is viewed as like almost like its own corporate entity. And so let's say now money's taken from the estate in order to do business. So where does the profits go? So what the Mishnah is going to be teaching us is that sometimes the profits are going to go right back into the corporation, right back into the estate. And sometimes profits can be enjoyed by various members of the estate. So how are we going to make a distinction? So the Mishnah is going to make the following distinction. So again, I'm going to start again from the beginning of the Mishnah. So dad died and lived. And he left children. He left children, both who are adults and minors. So if the older ones now are doing shevach, if they are taking the money and they're making business with the money and they're making profit on the money, so that profit's going to go right back to the estate. And so that now is going to be a bump for the estate, not for them who are doing it. Now, the Mishnah seems to be indicating that, in other words, the Mishnah seems to be setting itself up very calculated, in a very deliberate manner. Meaning that the Mishnah is talking about where there are older sons and younger sons. What if they're older sons and older sons? Meaning, what if you have a group of the estate, some members of the estate, one or two brothers of the estate, who are basically taking the opportunity, in other words, they have money, and they're looking to create a profit with the money, and the other members of the estate are adults. Would the halacha change? Would the halacha stay the same? So that, the Mishnah is not clear. Quite frankly, the Gemara is not clear about that as well. And the Rishonim discuss and debate that very issue. You could take a look at Tosfos. Tosfos 1, 2, 3, 4, fourth Tosfos on the Amud. It's very short, but he touches on this issue. Hishbichu gedol mashevach leemtza. Pirush Rivam, he quotes the Rivam. Rivam could be the brother of the Rashbam. In other words, there are a couple of Rivams falling in the Balei HaTosfos. So whatever, it's one of the Balei HaTosfos. Let's say it simply. So Pirush Rivam do what din gedolim gedolim. So the same halacha would be true whether if both of the if all members of the estate are adults. Ella orcha de milsenaka. As far as the example that's given in the Mishnah is just giving the most practical and quite frankly, the kind of setup where this would happen most frequently, where if I have kids who are part of the estate who are minors, so they're obviously not going to take the opportunity to make a profit with the estate. So that's why the Mishnah sets it up like this. But the Rivam is of the opinion that the same thing would be true even if the other members of the estate were adults as well. Okay, so far what have we seen together in the Mishnah? The first halacha of the Mishnah is that any profit that's done, that is generated from the estate, goes back to the estate. The estate is the one who gains the profit. However, im amru ru'u mashkini achaba, hare anu osav ochlim. Let's say the brothers who are about to do profit with the estate turn to the other brothers and say, look, ru'u mashkini achaba. Literally, look at what dad left. Now, look at what dad left. They're not just simply saying, hey, look guys. What they're saying is, we're ready to divide right now. Meaning, as far as we're concerned, we're ready for the division, we're ready to take our shares, meaning we're here and we would like to divide. Okay, for whatever reasons, we're not going to do it right now, but we're ready to do so. So, hare anu osim va'ochlim hishbich latzma. Now, what we're going to do is, we want to take opportunity and take at least our share of the money in order to turn a profit on it. So, under those circumstances where they make this verbal declaration that we are going to take shares of the estate and we're going to turn a profit on it and we're going to generate revenue based on it. So then what they could do is they could take the profit to themselves. Now the Mishnah doesn't say this, but I think it's fair for us to speculate and argue that if they lose money, well then they're going to have to reimburse. Meaning I think that's fair to say. Now admittedly the Mishnah doesn't say this, nor does the Gemara even discuss it, but I think it's fair to say. Meaning as long as it's estate money, so if they want to turn a profit on it, that's fine, but they also have to accept any kind of loss if in the event that there's a loss.
So the profit is not like prorated and divided based on the...
Well, without them making a verbal declaration, it is. Meaning, without them making that verbal declaration, the profit is going to go back to the estate. It's going to go back to the corporation. But with the declaration, they're basically saying, look, we're earmarking this money for us, and therefore the profits that are gained from it are going to go to us. And the Gemara says that the same thing is true regarding a woman. A woman who, in the event that she inherits, now, if we're talking about her husband's death, she doesn't inherit. We know the halacha is that a woman doesn't inherit her husband's estate. So what exactly are we talking about? Stay tuned. The Gemara later on is going to address that. But basically, in the event that the woman is now handling the estate, so it's going to be the same halacha. Which is that if she doesn't make any kind of qualification and she basically takes the estate money, turns a profit on it, creates revenue with that money, so he shbich lemsa, so the profits go back into the estate. If, however, she says to the kids, look, this is what the husband left for me, this is what my husband left for me. Now again, I understand there's the overarching issue of she doesn't inherit her husband's estate, which we're going to address later on. But in the event that she says that, so harani osev alchalas yishbich alatzma, so therefore the shevach goes back to her because she quote unquote she called it. Much like we had the case earlier in the Mishnah where the brothers who want to generate revenue from the estate, so if they call it, if they say to the brothers, look, we're this is for us, so they can earmark and call it so that their profit is going to go to them. Okay. Again, I'm going to assume that. The Mishnah doesn't say it, but it's so reasonable to suggest, and I think it's even right.
But she can't
have to lose. No, we're talking about a case where somehow it's hers. Meaning, you're right. Under normal circumstances, it doesn't belong to her. So, and she's just, generally speaking, she is just an executor of the estate. But she is not, it's not hers. So under those circumstances, she has absolutely no right to touch any of it. We're talking about where she has some sort of ownership in the estate. And again, that's not normal. In other words, that doesn't normally happen. Gemara later on will give us a couple scenarios. The Rashbam later on will give us a couple scenarios of how that's going to happen. Okay, now what do we learn first in the Mishnah? That in the event that there are brothers who take some of the estate money and generate revenue with that money, so that revenue is going to go back to the estate and to be divided by all the brothers. That's what we learned the very first halacha of the Mishnah. What the Gemara now is going to do is it's going to qualify that first halacha of the Mishnah, the Lo Shanu. Lo Shanu L'Shashavchana Chasim Achmas Nechasim. We're talking about where, how is the revenue generated? It was generated internally. Meaning, we used the money of the estate in order to generate more revenue. If, however, even in the first case of the Mishnah, where they didn't call it, they didn't declare it, they didn't earmark it, but how do they generate revenue? By using their own resources. Now, their own resources could come in the form of their own capital, or their own resources can also come in the form of their own actual work and labor. Meaning, if what they're doing is that they're creating profit and revenue using their own resources in order to create that profit and revenue, even without a declaration, that profit and revenue is going to be enjoyed by them. Ini. Gemara says, this is true, this is accurate. V'ham Rabbi Chanina, afilu lo'niach le'maviyam ela udayna haschar le'emtza. So Rabbi Chanina made the following statement, which is that let's say dad left just a pit of water. That's all dad left. That was the entire estate. Right? A pit together with a cover on top. That's the udayni. And what the family does, or at least what some of the brothers do, is they rent it out so other people could use it. So basically now we're taking the estate, which is just a pit of water, but we're generating revenue with it. We're renting it out to people so that they could use it. So what do we say? Haschar le'emtza. So that we said now that any profit that's going to be generated is going to go to the estate. The brothers didn't make any declarative statement. And so, therefore, the profit's going to go back to the estate. Now, let's just, in terms of the pit of water, one thing we need to know in order to appreciate and understand the Gemara coming up is that even when you rent it out, that in of itself is not going to be enough. You have to rent it out, and you have to stand guard by the pit. The reason being is because without you standing by guard by the pit, and the lid is unlocked, so anyone who comes by now would be able to, of course illegally, help themselves to some of the water from the pit. So therefore, it requires shmira, it requires guards. And what the Gemara now is going to challenge is, so what do we have over here? We have a scenario in which there's an estate, which is just a pit of water, there are brothers, and some of the brothers now are renting it out to others, but at the same time, they also have to provide their services in order for this to work. So therefore, it is revenue generated, but based on their own personal performance and services that they have to put in, specifically their shmira, the guarding. So the Gemara says, now, if you're telling me that any time that they have to inject their own resources in order to create the money, then the profit belongs to them, but we see clearly over here that's not true. The Rabbi Chanina ruled very clearly that in the case of the water pit, the revenue generated is going to go back into the estate and not to be taken by the brothers who are doing the guard duty. So the Gemara's response is, Shani Udina, I'm sorry, let me read the question first. Very top line of Kuf Mem Dalam Aleph. V'ha Udinu Demachmas Atzmohu. So the Gemara's question is, isn't this coming from their own personal service that they're providing? And therefore, shouldn't they get the funds, the revenue? So the Gemara says, Shani Udina Dilinit Yerosuhu Da'avida V'afilu Kitaru Nama Imatim Mantur Elohu. So the Gemara says over here, services being provided is not a very skilled or specific service. We're talking about just standing guard. The Gemara says, who could stand guard? Anybody can stand guard. You can even have the kids standing guard around the pit. Now, admittedly, the guarding of the older brothers is going to be a better guarding, admittedly, than the kids doing the guarding. That part's true. But still, the idea is that when we're saying that it has to be that the brothers can assume the revenue going to them if they are providing the resources, it has to be resources which is specific to them, either their own money or some sort of skill that they're providing that can't just simply be replicated by anybody or by any of the other brothers. Okay. Continuing the Gemara, now we're in the second case of the Mishnah. Second case of the Mishnah is where the brothers call it. And the brothers say to the brothers who want to do business with the estate money, say to the other brothers, we're ready to split it right now. Now, I know we're not going to split it right now. Let's imagine very easily that the other brothers are minors and they just simply don't have the wherewithal to handle the money that's going to be given to them. So, we're not going to split it right now, but the older brother says, but we want to split it right now. And what we're going to do is we're going to take our share of the estate and we're going to turn profit on it and we're going to keep the revenue to ourselves. And the Mishnah says, well, if they make that kind of declaration, it works. And the profit then can be enjoyed by themselves. Rav Safra Shavak Avua Zuze Shak Zuze. So the Gemara tells the following story regarding Rav Safra. Rav Safra was left in estate by the father. Rav Safra also had a bunch of brothers. Shaklinu Avar Bahu Iska. Now Rav Safra took some of the estate and generated money. In other words, he did business with it and he turned a profit. And now he wanted to keep the profit for himself. Asu ache tavua bedina kame derava. So the brothers go over, and the brothers said, "Wait 1 second, slow down. We didn't divide the estate yet. The estate was still in its undivided form. What the Gemara elsewhere calls refers to as the tfusas abayis. We can call it like almost like a corporation, almost like a trust. So we didn't divide the estate yet." And remember the Mishnah, meaning the Mishnah we just learned together in the beginning of today's shiur. The Mishnah says that if one brother is going to be using the estate money in order to make a profit, profits go back into the estate. And only when a formal declaration is made at the beginning, then and only then can you enjoy the revenue to yourself. But the brothers are now going to argue in front of Rava, who is presiding over this case, look, our brother Rav Safra, he didn't make any formal declaration, so therefore the profits that he generated, it should go into the estate and not to into his own not to his own pocket. So Amalu Rav Safra Gavarabahu. So Amalu, he says to them, meaning he in this case, meaning Rava, who's presiding over this case, he says to them, meaning the brothers, Rav Safra Gavarabahu. Well, your brother's a great man. And Lo Shavi Girsa Vatarch Lachrina, and look, he spends all of his time learning. And so now he spends all of his time learning, so now he's taking time out of his day, which is not normal for him. He's a great man. He's always involved in learning. And so therefore, under these circumstances, what we have is a scenario in which, even though he didn't articulate that the prophets are going to stay by him, the context is so strong that we are going to assume that the prophet's going to go to him. Meaning, he's not just somebody who fritters away his time, and if he's going to invest any time in business, the assumption, the default assumption is that the prophets are going to stay by him.
So what kind of investment did he make? Just put money up there? Or what?
No, he took estate money and he capitalized.
Yeah, but he didn't put any kind of physical effort into it, right?
However he capitalized the money. He bought and sold. He did some sort of capital effort with the money. So and the brothers are arguing, you didn't say that you were going to just keep the profits exclusively for yourself. So therefore, it should be kicked back into the estate. And now what Rav is arguing over here, it's really a tremendous chiddush, is that Rav Safra is he's such a man dedicated to his learning that any time taken away from his learning is assumed that he's going to be profiting for himself. Okay.
Should he have said something beforehand?
I mean, it would have clarified it. It absolutely would have clarified it. Correct. In other words, this is right. It's an umdana. It's a presumption that we're making, and it's admittedly it's a chiddush. Okay. Ha'isha shishbichu es anachasim shishbichu lamtza. So we're now up to the next case of the Mishnah. We're saying the same thing is true regarding a woman. In the event that a woman has receives her husband's estate. So it's basically going to now be the same thing, where it's going to be that, again, without making any kind of declarative statement, any profit she generates from the estate is going to go back to the estate. If, however, she makes a declarative statement that I'm going to be working, but I'm going to be working for me, and so therefore profits that are generated, revenue that's generated is going to go to me, so then it goes to her. The Gemara's question now, which I already foreshadowed when we did the mission together, is a really simple one, which is, hey, wait one second. How is she getting an estate? Isha b'nichse yasme ma'avidatei. Meaning, we're assuming that this is a case in which dad dies, leaving a wife and leaving children. Now, if that's true, so then wife is not getting anything. Now, when I say not getting anything, again, I qualify the way I've been qualifying for time and again. She's not getting anything in terms of an ownership share. She will be supported by the estate, but in terms of an ownership share, she doesn't get anything. So, like, what are we talking about over here? So, I'm Rabbi Yirmiyah b'Isha Yoresha. So, the Gemara says we're talking about a woman who inherits. Now, admittedly, Rabbi Yirmiyah's answer is really curt. It's like, it's just, oh, you know, no, well, she inherited. It only, of course, begs the question, well, how did she inherit? how did that happen? So the Rashbam over here gives a number of scenarios in which we can conceive of a scenario in which a woman is going to be inheriting her husband's estate. Take a look at the Rashbam. He gives a couple scenarios. Look, we'll go over the first one together. Kagon. Shenasa Reuven Bashem. And Reuven married his niece. Which in Bizman HaGemara was not, I mean, so before we get to Bizman HaGemara, meaning according to the Torah, perfectly fine. Most close relatives are arayos, or nerva, and you cannot marry most relatives, and quite frankly, you know, as per the Gemara in Yuma, we don't have a Yetzirah to marry our close relatives, sisters, mothers, daughters, but it's an erva. However, the closest relative that we are allowed to marry that's not included in arayos is that a man is allowed to marry his niece. And, now I could say it, Bizmana Gemara, and even before Bizmana Gemara, it was recommended that a man should marry his niece. To us, culturally, it does not speak to us. It's not in our general mindset. But it not only is mutter, but in the time of the Gemara, it happened. So Reuven marries his niece, Umesu, and now we're talking about a scenario in which Reuven and Shimon both die, right? The Bach adjusts the language of the Rashbam, so all this like reads a lot easier. But the basic idea is that Reuven and Shimon both die. V'yarshu b'nei Reuven u'bash Shimon es nechse Yaakov. And so now we can easily envision a scenario in which Yaakov's they die before Yaakov does. Then Yaakov, that's obviously the father of Reuven and Shimon, die. And so now who inherits Yaakov's estate? So it's going to be Reuven and Shimon. And if Reuven and Shimon are not there, it's going to be the children of Reuben and Shimon. Now, in this scenario, Reuben married the daughter of Shimon. So the daughter of Shimon now is going to stand to inherit part of the estate by virtue of the fact that it's that Yaakov is her grandfather. So that's just one scenario. The Rashbam covers a whole bunch of other scenarios as well. That would be one scenario in which we can find the wife inheriting part of the estate.
But the thing is that if they don't have children, then it wouldn't go back. You know, their father would just give it down to the children.
No, understood. But in other words,
but the wife is inheriting with the children, no?
She's inheriting with others as well.
With children or just other people?
Other descendants of Yaakov. Meaning, okay. Anyway, it's one way to do it. In the Rashbam goes through other ways as well, but you get the basic idea. Meaning, it's possible, it's conceivable that a woman can inherit the estate. So let's go back to the Gemara. So the Gemara says, "Isha." So this is Rav Yirmiyah's response: "Isha Yereshes." So Pshita. So the Gemara says, "Okay. So now, what do we just learn together? That in the event that a woman inherits part of the estate, so her rules are going to follow the same rules as when any one of the brothers inherit the estate, which again are very simple. If without qualification, their revenue is generated from the estate, the profit goes back to the estate. With qualification, so you get to keep the profit. So we learned that that's true regarding the brothers. And now what we're learning is it's true regarding the wife or the widow in the event that she inherits. To which the Gemara says, okay, now that we're here, let's ask a really simple question. Pshita. Meaning, okay, but now it's kind of obvious, right? We're talking now where a woman is part of the Yorshim. She's one who is inheriting part of the estate. So the rules are the same. And why would I have thought that the rules are any different? So the Gemara says, Gemara tells us the following Havamina. Look, it's unusual. Unusual that the woman is going to make commercial activity with the estate. And in this regard, we're saying this just as a Havamina. It would work to her favor. Why? Because, remember what we said with Rav Safra just a moment ago? Rav Safra is a Talmid Chacham. The man is not a businessman. Rava actually ruled that because Rava is not a businessman and his time is so precious, that if he's going to take any of the estate in order to create business with it, so we assume that the profit's going to go to him. The Gemara is saying regarding the woman, basically the same, but the Gemara doesn't conclude this way. It's a Havamina. That since the woman is generally not out there doing commercial activity with the estate, she is not the one who normally capitalizes on the estate. So therefore, if she does, we will assume, again, I'm saying it's a Havamina, we will assume that all the profits should go to her, being that it's so unusual that she does this. Chiddush now is that no. Unqualified, profits are going to go back to the estate. If she makes a qualification, so then the profits go to her. Okay. The Gemara now goes on to the next part of the Mishnah. Im Amra, if she says that, look what my husband left for me. I'm going to do, and I'm going to be ocheles. I'm sorry, and I'm going to consume. Meaning, I'm going to enjoy the profits of this. Hishbicha latzma goes to herself. So the next part of the Mishnah is that we learn that if she qualifies, she makes a qualification, the profit's going to go to her pshita. And again, the Gemara's response is, well, isn't that obvious? Ma'u detema kem deshvicha le milsa. The army katarcha kame yasme achule achla kamash malan. The Gemara says, look, I might have thought, again, it's just a Havamina, but it is a Havamina. So that, look, she is taking care of herself, but also keep in mind that she also has the children to consider as well. And generally speaking, the maternal instinct is such where, even though they're working for themselves, and even if they're qualifying, profits are going to me. But again, we're talking about she's a widow. She's also a mother to these young children. And you can imagine, again, as a Havamina, that even with a declaration that I'm going to capitalize on the estate and I'm going to keep the revenue for myself, even when she says that, but she didn't lose sight of the fact that there are Yisomim, there are orphans, and they need to be taken care of as well. And even with a declaration, I might have thought that the profits are still going to be shared by the estate. Kamash Malan. The Gemara says that's the Chiddush. Chiddush is that no. That when she qualifies, we will assume that her qualification is in fact a qualification. I'm Rabbi Chanina, Amas Isha Livno Gadol Bebayis Kana. Okay, we're going to now touch on a halacha, which, again, it's hard for us to relate to culturally. In other words, certainly the idea that In other words, your kids get married and you help them out early in life. And that idea is an old idea. That's a new idea. It's not that's gone unchanged for now, for many years. But over here, the idea that the Gemara now is expressing is as follows. Back in the good old days, when a young couple get married, so they get married in a house. And sometimes, in other words, the house was bought specifically for the purposes of marriage. Now, does that mean that the son now becomes the de facto owner of the house? Well, if dad says it at the time when he buys it, I'm buying it for my kid. I'm buying it for my next kid getting married. So then there's nothing to talk about, meaning obviously yes. What we're discussing now in the Gemara next little bit is going to be, what if dad made no stipulation whatsoever? In other words, dad bought a house for the chasna, and dad didn't say it was going to be for his son. But he married his son in that house that he purchased. Is it going to now de facto be the son's house? And I guess the Gemara is discussing it right now because we're like in the middle of like these umdanas. Like, well, you know, what is going to be our general assumption? Over here, what is our general assumption regarding dad buying a house? Having the chasna in the house, does the house now de facto belong to the son?
Where is
the chinyan? Right. Excellent question. You'll see the common denominator in the three cases that we're going to be discussing, this being the first of three cases, is that even without a kinyan, it's so apparent and so obvious, a kinyan is going to be unnecessary. But admittedly, though, that's the big chiddush of this whole discussion. Yeah, correct. And let's see this inside. Amar Rabbi Chanina Hamas Isha Livno Gadol Bebayis Kano. If you marry off your oldest son in a house, meaning a house designated for the chasna that dad bought, so then it's acquired by the son. Now, the Gemara is going to significantly qualify this particular halacha, v'dafka gadol. It's only for his oldest son, which, again, there's an assumption that he has a clear affinity towards, right? The Rashbam says it very clearly. Chaviv le'tfei. He likes his oldest son the best, and there's a Gemira's Das. There's a default assumption that dad bought it for the kid. And two, the second qualification, Basula. It has to be that he's marrying a woman who's a Basula, meaning that this is a significant marriage. And Vidavka Ishta Rishon, it has to be his first wife that he's marrying. Vidavka Ishiya Rishon, and this is dad's first chasna that he's making. So it's a whole bunch of firsts. So if everything is first, so then under these circumstances, even though dad did not say, I'm buying it for my son, he's just simply saying, I'm buying this for the chasna. So then we assume that the oldest son becomes the owner. So the Gemara says, Pshita Yichilo Avid Bayit Valiya Bayit Kanaliya Lokana. Now, let's say dad bought a two-floor building for the chasna. Now, the son does not need two floors. He's getting married, and it's just him and his beautiful new wife. However, what can we assume in terms of what goes towards the son? What kingdom is done to the son? So the Gemara says if it's a two-floor, he gets the first floor. He's not getting the second floor. The second floor is going to be for rental purposes. Okay, and next. But I will say this, says the Gemara. Let's say dad bought a house with an achsadra, with an extending porch. Okay, is the son getting both the house and the extending porch? Basically, a question we've asked in different ways many times throughout the Gemara. Is the achsadra part and parcel of the house? Is the achsadra considered a separate extension to the house? Next question of the Gemara. Shnei batim zelif ne mezeh. Mahu. What if I have two houses, one's an interior, the other's exterior, and the only way to get in and out of the interior house is through the exterior house? So, again, a construct which is discussed throughout the Gemara. So, under those circumstances, the dad bought that for his kids, but again, for the chasna, and now, question of, again, it's the oldest son, it's his first marriage, it's the besula, you hit all the qualifications, is the son going to get both interior and exterior house, is the son only going to get one of the two? Take with the Gemara leaves these last two questions unresolved. Meitzvah, the Gemara challenges, Yichelo Aviv Bayis or Klibayis, Klibayis Kana, Bayis Lo Kana. So if what dad sets aside is a house and furniture, Kli bayis kana, bayis lo kana. So he acquires the kli bayis, the furniture, but not the house itself. This seems to go against what we just learned together. What we just learned together is that under a very specific set of circumstances, the son is going to be the acquirer, the owner of the house. So I'm Rav Yirna Kagon Shaya Otsro Shal Aviv Munach Sham. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you when the son is not going to acquire the house. Rav Yirmiyah says that if, let's say, dad bought the house for the chasna, but then dad left some of his own personal belongings in the house, that is a clear demonstration on the part of the father that I am not buying this house for my son. Meaning, he's not going to be the owner. I bought it for the chasna, we'll make the chasna in the house, but he is not going to be the owner, and the way I'm declaring this is by putting my stuff up in the house. Now, in terms of what qualifies as putting up his stuff, the Gemara is going to be very specific. Nardai Amri Afilu Shuvcha Dione. So, in Yeshiva of Narda, they said that if dad left, let's say, a small little birdhouse, a dovecote, in the house that he bought for the chasna, that is dad's way of marking his territory. This house is going to belong to me. It's not going to be acquired by my son.
Are you supposed to act
like chasna? It's just a, meaning this halacha in of itself is an unusual halacha where we make a default assumption that he's buying it for his son, even though no formal kinyan was done for the son. And now what basically we're saying is that if the father is marking his territory, so then we don't make this default assumption. That's the basic idea behind the Gemara. Rav Yehuda and Rav Papi Amar Afilu Atzitzit Daharsana. Rav Yehuda and Rav Papi say that even if it's a little bit of herring that dad leaves in the house, that is another way that dad marks his territory, right? It's my herring that I left there. And Marzutra Anshdeve Lebrei Vitale Sandala. Marzutra married off his son in a house that he bought for the chasna, but again for Marzutra to mark off his territory, demonstrating that this house is not going to go to his son and his son is not going to acquire his house. So what does he do? He hangs up his shoes in the house, meaning Marzutra, by marking off this territory, by hanging up his shoes, that's a demonstration of this house is not going to be acquired by my son. And one more, Rav Ashi Nasbe Lebrei, Vitalele Ashisha Demashcha. Rav Ashi married off his son in a house and left his salad dressing in the fridge in the house. Okay, I admittedly, I'm being a little cheeky in terms of explaining this, but basically, it's basically what it means. He left a small jug of oil in the house, and that is, again, a way of reflecting that this house is not going to be acquired by my son. Amar Marzutra, the Gemara now is going to string together the three halachas, one we just learned, together with two other halachas that follow this basic an absence of reasoning. The Gemara says, it's an interesting comment by the Gemara, and this is not the first time we've heard this. We saw this back in Gittin. So the Gemara says, Amar Marzutra Hani Tlas Mili Shavin Rabbani Keuch Zabalo Taima. Three things that the rabbis said, it's as if it's halacha without a rational explanation. Meaning that we're learning together three halachas that defy the general laws of halacha. Meaning, if I'm buying a house for my son, so we need a proprietary act, we need a kinyan. And we're learning together now that if I buy the house for the chasna, even though I didn't do any formal acquisition, my son is going to acquire the house. How does that work? Hilchasa belotayma. So the hilchasa belotayma means that this is a halacha that defies the general laws of kinyanim. And there are going to be two other halachas that also operate in this manner, where we don't need a formal kinyan in order for something to happen. So let's acquaint ourselves now with the second and third halacha. Chadaha. So one halacha is what we just learned together. Idach the Amar of Yehuda Meshmul Hakosav Konachasav Leishto Lo Asa El Apachapa. Let's say a person assigns all of his estate to his wife. He assigns everything to his wife. And he writes, he doesn't say in the contract, you're an executor, you're an apotropos, you're a custodian. No, he actually gifts all the estate over to his wife. We will assume, we are going to step in and assume, I don't mean we here in this room, but the Chachamim have gauged that even though it's stated in this contract, in the shtar, that he assigned all of his estate over to his wife, she is just the executor of the estate. She is not the owner of the entire estate. Now, we assume that when the husband did this, he did this only to give her kavod. and only so that the children would listen to her, but not that she actually is going to become the owner of the estate. And then finally, in halacha number 3, idach da'amarav mana, I'm sorry, da'amarav mana li bi'adecha tenei olaploni b'mama shoshim kana. A halacha which is, I would say, a little bit more popular, I certainly think, and the idea of mama shloshim. Mama shloshim is the idea that I have an account payable and I have an account receivable. And the two people that, you know, are on the other ends of these accounts are standing right here. Oh, so basically now, you owe me money and I owe you money, so you know what? Why don't we just cut out the middleman? Meaning me being the middleman. Let's cut me out, and now you're going to owe him the money. So we have created a kinyan just by the three of us standing together. In the event that the three of us stood together, even though we have not done any kind of formal kinyan, it works. So, three times in halacha where it does not follow the general rules of halacha. In halachas 1 and 3, it will be a kinyan without an actual kinyan itself. In halacha number 2, even though the husband says, you, my wife, are going to be the owner of all my estate, we don't really mean ownership, we really mean that you're going to be a custodian, you're going to be an executor of the estate, but really my sons are going to inherit it, and I'm only saying this so that the sons will listen. Okay, now we say the Gemara's language over here is hilchasa below taima. These are halachas with no reason, with no rationale. Take a look at the second to last tosas on the Amud. Ksas tam yesh. In other words, it's not that these are totally illogical. Right, the Gemara's language over here is absolute. Tosha says, don't read the Gemara absolutely. We're not talking about, there's not a total lack of logic over here. Dekem shepina sabayim samcha daita deben, vegam einlo, ana lador svaruhu shenas nolo. Meaning, in case number one, where the house is going to go to his son, even without a kinyan. It's, in other words, Tosfos says, it's somewhat reasonable, meaning he cleared the house, the dad didn't leave any of his own possessions in the house, the son needs a place to live, the son just got married, so it makes sense that it should go to the son. What the Hilchasa below Taima is that it works even without a kinyan. But it's not perfectly illogical. V'chein, akos ivkona chasav lishto, olav no, mistam lo liten alan iskaven, ala lechabda shalo yaminich banavku bivalo klom. Meaning in halacha number 2, where he's assigning all of his estate to his wife, or he's assigning all of his estate to one of his sons. Again, it's nearly impossible to imagine that a quote-unquote normal person would leave everyone out of the estate. It's almost impossible to imagine. Therefore, what we're going to do is we're going to step in and we're going to qualify. This is probably what he meant, even though it's not what he said. So again, it's not perfectly illogical. And the third halacha, mama shloshtam, lo ratzu chachamim la'atriach la'vi edim la'asus kinyan, demistam, kevin sha'am alo, but mama shloshtam hikna lo legamrei. And also, mama shloshtam, look. In other words, sometimes business has got to be quick and it's got to be fluid. And I have an account payable and I have an account receivable. And I have everyone here. So you know what? Let's just cut out the middleman. And in other words, then you'll pay him. Right? You owe me money, I owe him money. So you'll pay him. So if we have to go through the normal course of contracts, business, witnesses, it's not going to be fluid. And the Chachamim understand that businesses sometimes have to be a fluid situation. And just quicker. So again, Tosfos points out over here, it's not perfectly illogical, it's just that in these three scenarios, we've relaxed the rules of what normally is necessary when you're doing a formal kinyan. Okay, good. We're up to the next amud. Kuf Mendal Amud Beis. We start now in the top of the amud with a new Mishnah. Mishnah starts off Achim Ashutim Shenafal Echad Mehem Lo'omnus Nafal Emtsa. Okay, let me give a little bit of background so that we can really understand and appreciate this Mishnah. Back in the good old days, taxes were collected, but not by an organization set aside for the purposes of collection of tax. Right? Here in America we have what's called the IRS. Okay? An organization specifically designed for the purposes of collection of tax for the government. Back in the good old days, the system was a lot simpler. And that is that people got an appointment from the king to be the tax collector. And that appointment was an honor, a privilege, and quite frankly, also financially beneficial. And I say that not for the unscrupulous person. I'm even talking about somebody who is scrupulous and somebody who's honest. If he's given this appointment of tax collection, so sometimes they're given an actual percentage of the tax for their efforts of collecting, and sometimes they are perfectly within their right to take the money that was collected for tax and to capitalize with that money. Meaning you have all this money, you just collected, granted you are going to have to give them to the king, but during an interim period, you have an opportunity to capitalize on that money. So, given this opportunity of being a tax collector is financially beneficial, it can create potential revenue. And so now, one of the brothers of the estate gets tapped and appointed and said, you're going to now be the king's tax collector. And so now, he is now going to have an opportunity to make money. Who's going to be the beneficiary of that money? Is it going to be him personally, or does the revenue have to go back to the estate? Why would we make an argument that the revenue should go to the estate? So, as we're going to see in the Gemara, but I'm going to say it now, the reason why is because how come he got an appointment? How come he was tapped to be the tax collector? So generally speaking, back in the good old days, you got appointed to be a tax collector because of who your family was. Meaning, for certain families had a certain status in a certain class. And so, what the Gemara now is, we're still at the Mishnah, but we'll see this in the Gemara as well. What the Mishnah and the Gemara are basically telling us is that it's not really you who got appointed, it's really the family that got appointed. And all you are just really is a representative of the family. And as a result of that, so that when you generate this revenue, it's not really you, it's really the family. And therefore, if you're part of an estate, the revenue is going to go and get kicked back to the estate.
What if the guy has several sons, and who designates, who decides who the son is going to be going to tax?
Right. Unclear. Meaning, I'm explaining. I hear you. I'm explaining the general idea of the Mishnah so that we understand why in the world we're even having this discussion of the revenue going back to the estate. But I understand that there are a number of specific scenarios in which my rationale that I just presented is not going to work out. But I'm giving a basic idea, a basic sense of what the Mishnah is communicating. I'm going to read the Mishnah inside. We are in the very top of Kuf Mem Dal Amud Beis. Ach and Ashufim Shenafel Echem Mehem Lomnus. If I have brothers who are partners, right? That term just simply means that the estate has not yet been divided. So it's in a state right now. Dad died, we haven't divided it yet, so it's in a state. So Shenafel Echem Mehem Lomnus, and one of the brothers was tapped to become an Uman. Now, literally Uman means a craftsman, but in our context, that it's not what it means. Again, the Gemara is going to be clear about it. The Rashbam says in the Mishnah, right, this Uman over here simply means a tax collector in this regard. So Nafal Emsa. So any profit that's realized from the taxes that he collected is going to go to the estate. And again, I already explained the reason why. The Gemara is going to say it again. Chalav Nisrapin, Nisrapin Mishal Atzmo. Now, let's say, again, during this period of time where dad died, there's the estate, but we haven't divided yet, and one of the brothers gets sick. So, medical bills are going to come out of the estate. But, the Mishnah says, but out of his share, meaning that we'll keep a record of how much money he took. That is not estate money that's paying. It's really his share of the estate that's going to pay for his medical bills. It kind of seems obvious, and the Gemara is going to raise that as an issue, meaning, of course. In other words, my shares of the estate shouldn't pay for his medical treatment. Okay, we'll address that in just a moment. We start with the Gemara Tanam in Achim Sheminuhu Gabai. If I have one of the brothers who was appointed to become either a Gabai, Gabai over here, meaning a collector. Oh, I did? Tana, Hai Omnus Lomnus Amelch. Thank you. Much appreciated. So, Hai Omnus Lomnus Amelch. So, Omnus over here means the king's appointment. Right, like I said back in the Mishnah, like the Gemara now is explaining. Tana Rabbanan, we go Gemara quotes the Braisa. Echem and Achim Sheminu Gabai Upomas Tos. If I have one of the brothers who's appointed as a Gabai or as a Pulmas Tos, again, basic idea is a public servant, either a tax collector or Pulmas Tos. Rashbam suggests maybe it's a policeman. Either way, it's a public appointment that's going to have a possible. revenue opportunity. So you got to point it. If the reason why you got to point it is because of the family that you belong to, right? We've seen recently in American politics, you know, family appointments. Okay, it's as old as old comes, and it's, you know, and it's current as well. Okay, so if you got a family appointment because you're a member of the family, so that means then now that the revenue is going to go to the estate. And imach mas achim la'achim. Now, sorry, let me do it the other way around. Imach mas achim la'achim, imach mas atzmo la'atzmo. If, however, you got the appointment based on your own merit, so then you get to keep the profit. Now, understandably, it is a gray line that separates how come you got the appointment. You got the appointment because of the family, or because you got an appointment because of yourself. But I think it's easy to say that if this particular family has been tapped time and again by the king, so I think it's easy then to argue that when dad dies and the estate hasn't been divided yet and one of the brothers has been appointed, that's a family appointment. Because we've seen historically that this particular family, it keeps on getting appointed again and again. I understand, however, that it's not always going to be clear-cut whether it's a family appointment or whether it's a personal appointment. The Gemara says, look, if it's a family appointment, so then the revenue generated is going to go to the estate. The Gemara says, isn't it obvious? The Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe this particular child who got appointed, yes, it's a family appointment, but at the same time also, it's clear that this kid is the sharpest of all of them. And maybe the argument you can make is that, look, nobody else was going to be selected to become the tax collector other than this one. He's the sharp one. And so maybe now we can make the argument that, yes, even though it's a family appointment, but no one else was going to be picked, and therefore he should be able to keep the profit. Kamashman, the Chiddush is, no, he's not going to keep the profit. If it's a family appointment, profit's going to be shared by the family. Ma'od detema, I'm sorry, I didn't read this, I was just reading inside. Ma'od detema churfa garim lay. I might have thought that his sharpness is what caused him to be selected, and therefore he should keep the profit all to himself. Kamashman, that's the Chiddush. Tana Rabbanan. Gemara quotes a brisa. Echem and achem shenata masayim zuz lomotar lomorabnus. Let's say one of the members of the family, again, we're talking about the estate in its undivided form, and it's like corporate, as a corporate entity, if you will. So one of the brothers dipped into the estate in order, so 200 zuz, which is a considerable amount of money. That's the payoff of a general ksuva contract. It's like, I don't know how to put that in American dollars, but It's a good amount of money. So, and he did so in order to, so they could learn Torah or to learn a profession. So now the brothers can say to this one brother, look, if you're with us, meaning if you want to live at home with us, so then we're going to feed you from the estate. If, however, imat in ata etzlena, but if you're not living with us, we're not going to support you with the estate. So, in other words, I understand that you want to go off and learn Torah, learn a profession. I get it. But the brothers have the legitimate right to say to him, look, the money that you took, that's your money. In terms of the estate supporting you, only if you live together with us, physically in our house. So the Gemara says, v'leis v'lei, kol hechadi. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Meaning, the estate is responsible right now in its undivided form to provide support for everyone in the family. So why isn't he able to collect at least support from the estate wherever he is? The Gemara's answer, which probably all of you guessed already, Misayel Rav Huna, Dama Rav Huna, Birchas Abayis Beruba. So the Gemara says, well, this really reflects the idea of Rav Huna, and that is that the bracha comes to a house when everyone's living in the same house. Now, there's an easy way to explain this, and then there's a less easy way to explain it. I'll start off with the easy way to explain it, which is Rabbeinu Chanana. Rabbeinu Chanana is quoted in the top Tosfos on this Amud. And that is that when you're living in the family house, the AC bill is going to be the same. Right, the water heater is going to be a little bit more. It's going to be taking more water, but the AC is going to basically be the same. Okay, his body temperature may be providing a little bit more heat in the house, but basically in other words, when you have all these common expenses, which is basically household expenses, which are
overhead.
Right, it's going to be overhead, and it's going to be the same amount, and it's basically a fixed amount. So therefore, the brothers are making a very salient point to this one kid who wants to go out on his own. And that is, look, you want to learn, fine. You want to learn a profession, fine. But you got to live in the house in order to get support, because that money is going to be a fixed amount. If, on the other hand, you want to go off now, and now you want to incur another electric bill, that's not coming from us. Okay, that's the easy way to explain the Gemara. And then there's the less easier way to explain the Gemara, which is the way that the Rashbam explains, and Tosfos quotes this as well, and that is, that mazel. Meaning that there's a certain mazel that's generated when we're all living in the same house, which is what the Gemara says when the Gemara says, Birchas Abayis Beruba. There's more bracha that comes to the house when we're all living in the same house together. We're all providing additional mazel to the house. Okay. Can I explain it any better than I just did? Probably not, but there's something to be said about everyone living together. Not just a pragmatic one electric bill. Now the Gemara says, "Valeis v'leil lefir birchas abayis." So the Gemara says, "Okay, so this one kid wants to go off on his own and live on his own." And the Gemara says, and the brothers can protest him and say, well, "Look, right? We're going to support you, but in other words, if you live with us, obviously support to us would come much cheaper. It would be a much cheaper event, financial burden, if you live together with us. You want to go off on your own now, and you want us to support you." So the Gemara says, "So why don't we do some sort of analysis?" It's not going to be easy. But why don't we do some sort of analysis of what it would have cost him had he lived in the house versus what it would have cost him had he been away? And let's at least give him that small amount from the estate of how much it would have cost him had he lived in the house. Gemara says, Hachinam, the Gemara says, okay, you're right. Meaning, oh, that's fine. Meaning, if we can somehow come up with some analysis of what it would cost the estate had he lived in the house, so would he be entitled to that as mezonos? The Gemara says, basically, yeah. Yeah, that he would be entitled to. And then we're up to the last part of the Mishnah, Chalav Nisrapin, Nisrapin Mishal Atzmo. We're now talking about him getting sick and using estate money. The Mishnah says that he can use estate money. In other words, what he can use is only his share of the estate, but he cannot use the estate money in order to heal. Shalach Ravin, Mishmei de Ravila, Lo Shanu El Shechala Bipshia. Ava Ba'onis Nisrapi Menemsa. The Gemara says, well, it depends how he got sick. Very interesting Gemara. If he got sick because of his own negligent activity, so then the money that is paid in order to heal is going to have to come out of his own pocket. However, if he got sick ba'onis, circumstances that were totally beyond his control, and he got sick for no fault of his own, so then that's considered an expense of the estate, and therefore the estate is going to have to pay for him. It'd be similar to eating. Similar, but it's kind of like eating, meaning that in the estate, in its undivided portion, has to support every member of the estate. Here, when he gets sick, and it's not due to his negligence, it's just simply it was an act of God. So then, the estate pays for his medical bill. The Gemara says, now really, in other words, do we assume that a person gets sick based on his own negligence? And the Gemara says, absolutely. And this is a shout out to Mom, who was correct. Mom said, put the coat on, because if you don't, you're going to get sick. And Mom's right. Meaning that it's within our control to be healthy, to be sick. Not always, but often. And the Gemara says it. Gemara says, "Kedar Rabbi Chanin, Damer Rabbi Chanin, Al Kol B'Day Shemayim Chut Mitzinam Apachim, Shnei Mitzinam Apachim B'Derech Ike Shomer Nafsho Yerchak Mehem." The pasuk in Mishlei says very clearly that a person has control over the elements, and that a person can take care of himself so that he does not get sick. He can protect himself from the cold and from the heat. And so, based on this pasuk in Mishlei, if a person is negligent and gets sick because he didn't take care of himself, so then the estate does not have to pay for his medical bills. Only in the case of ones does the estate have to pay for his medical bills. Okay, I will stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up from the Mishnah in the middle of the Yom.